Welcome to the Maverick Podcast, business growth tips and discussions to make you the expert in demand.
Hello, welcome to another episode of the Maverick Podcast. I am Luke Two, and today I'm joined by Jim Frawley from Bellwether. How are you doing, Jim?
Fantastic, thank you for asking.
Well, thanks for taking the time to come on the podcast. Basically, what I want to do straight away is if you could tell everyone essentially who you are and how you approach your business, and just give people quite a little rundown of what you've been doing in the last like 2 years.
Sure. My name is Jim Frawley. I run an organization called Bellwether. We are an executive development and business coaching firm based here in New York. My background prior to that was in the financial industry primarily, but a lot of executive communication, strategic planning. And now we work with individuals looking to get into the C-suite, as well as small businesses on how to reposition themselves for the new economy. Change is happening faster than most people can adapt, but we could put good strategies together. So, you know, over the last 2 years, it's been very busy building what I like to call the future of talent development. There's such a gap in terms of the reality of the world and what we think we're supposed to do. And so what does change management actually look like in a real tangible, realistic way to help people adapt to what's happening?
Help people guide change rather than just react to change as things come along. Like, oh, we need to do that. I can see it. I need to do it now. And then it moves along. And it's kind of like you want to avoid people feeling a lot of the time, don't you? Because right, when that happens, people rush and make mistakes.
Right. When we get so reactive and we're not properly prepared, we make mistakes or we make regrettable decisions. And that's really what the new economy is all about, is how do you make swift decisions and how do you get people to prepare for change when you don't know what change is coming? And it's a very difficult task to do. But when I think about preparing for change when you don't know what change is coming, you know, macro change, whatever the change is that's coming, whether it's workplace, whether it's community, whether it's geopolitical, whatever it might be, all that macro change requires a focus on the micro individual. And that's the one constant through all the changes, the individual responding to it. And so we really take a micro approach to belief systems and how do you get settled and what do you, you know, how are you building the foundation for making really truly effective decisions in the moment?
Yeah, it's an interesting way because, like I said, with people with just reacting to things, it's how they internally approach their business and their business approach versus their personal approach. And it's mitigating, you know, the life changes and the changes of the world versus how your business is changing, how your market is changing, and not being frightened to just say, okay, I don't know what's going to happen, but I'm going to make the best plan possible to make what I want to happen. So what do you think in terms of business owners and in terms of entrepreneurs, what do you think is a skill that people really need to have going forward in 2023?
For 2023, I think the first skill, and this is a skill, most people aren't thinking about it, is to lose the expectations and assumptions, right? And that's one of the big things I work on just from a foundation with business owners or executives is, you know, what assumptions are you bringing to the table that's impacting your ability to make decisions? Because all of our experience is based on the past. But we have a new world. We have new changes that are happening very, very quickly. And so any assumptions on the way you think things are supposed to happen are really out the window. And so how do we teach people to ask really good questions? The definition of a question is how do you make a request for information where you legitimately do not know the answer? And when we can eliminate the expectations and assumptions we have, we can then really raise the expectations we have of ourselves. And we can know what to ignore, we can know where to focus, but eliminating those expectations and assumptions and asking really, really good questions is step number one.
Yeah, I agree. I think when it comes to it, I assume a lot of the time whenever I'm creating content, when I'm creating these podcasts, creating all these blogs, there's a lot of the time where you have to pull back and you can't assume that people have the same insights that you do. You can't prove that people have the same way of thinking as you do. So sometimes you can jump to conclusions, and this is really important when anyone's putting out content or if anyone wants to market their business online. You need to realize that people do care what you have to say, for one, because people go, oh, well, everyone knows this, so what's the point of me saying it? You know, that's not true. A lot of people have different experiences. Then it's, can you break something down even further? So if you have a piece of knowledge which you think will, you know, really benefit someone, no matter what industry you're in, you could have a, you know, a one sentence to someone and they go, oh, I've never thought of it that way, I could really redefine how I think about this. But you could take it a step further and say it's something else, or say something what you really think is basic but really is really good knowledge. And it is removing that train of thought, because we all are, you've had a unique experience than I'd have. I bet our lives are completely different, but at the same time, we can get together and we can say, okay, this is how I approach social media and content, how I do things. You can tell me bits. You've put out your own podcast. You've got probably about 113 episodes right now as well. Yeah. I've looked on your blog and you really put stuff out there a lot of the time. But it's, I'd say, not having the assumption that people don't want to hear you or that you're putting out something which is irrelevant. It's more of a case of finding out really what people enjoy, but not being afraid to just putting some of that in and thinking, oh, you know. This whole content game, this whole marketing game out there is just a case of making sure you put some of that in and then kind of tailoring that to yourself. That would be like my goal for the 2023. And that's what the skill I think is important to have, is to learn to listen, but also not listen to yourself too much.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's, I realized this a few years after launching my business, was I had to unlearn everything I learned in corporate, was one. But then two is I had to say, what's my voice? I had to find a voice. I had to have an opinion. And a lot of people will just spit back what they've heard from other people. But what is the value that you're bringing to these opinions? And the only way you can have a really good opinion is by getting those different perspectives and understanding what different people see. And, you know, I think a lot of people, when they're creating content, try to make it for everyone. So they go a little soft, where they talk about it in these theoretical parameters that aren't really tangible for everybody. And so pick your specific group, have an opinion. Somebody will find value in it, but share that opinion and be prepared to challenge that opinion and be prepared to have discussions with people, because that's what's going to really differentiate people, is to have the opinion that brings real, real value.
It's really interesting how people have, there's the corporate, and it seems like, oh, the small business is the personal and the one-to-one, but then you have all the corporate side, which needs to be all analytical and then driven. Yes, you have to talk about the results, and there's a little bit more about that, but you're still talking to a person, even if you're talking to a corporate level. And if you want to talk to a CEO, you're still talking to a person. A CEO doesn't become a CEO by ranking up. It's like a video game where all of a sudden they're a completely different character with a stone face and they only talk in, you know, percentages and ROIs. It's you're still talking to a person. And if you can resonate with anyone, that's where you can actually, you know, with content, create great clients and people who will talk to you and people who will benefit from talking to yourself.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's understanding just, you know, a fundamental communication model. You know, how does communication work? And communication, you send information. When we think about social content or anything else, or when we talk about business, we're so concerned about telling you what we think, but we're not necessarily concerned with how it's actually going to be received. So you could send the same message to 50 different people, but it has to be customized to those individuals so that they can get the full message of what it is that you're trying to communicate. And that's the full model. And having that going back and forth, whether it's an executive in a corporate environment, whether it's being a small business talking to your customers. When we think about the three real groups of audience members, you've got your, I guess, your shareholders, you've got your team members, people who work for you, and then you've got your customers. And those people can get the same message, but we have to tweak it in different types of ways based on the way that they're going to receive it. And so understanding how communication works is very helpful as you're pushing through, whether it's in the walls of a corporate business or whether it's launching your own business or working on your own business, depending on who your audience is.
Yeah, I talked to a communication specialist and a PR specialist, and we mentioned about internal communication as well, which was interesting. But it reflects your point with different audiences, because if you're talking to your team, they're going to take something differently when you're talking to your clients, mainly because they're wrapped around in what you do all the time, which is why people can in a business, you don't want to create an echo chamber, because that echo chamber then will be put out into your marketing. And if the marketing is just promoting something which internally is received well, but externally people have no idea what you're talking about, you know, you need to break that barrier. You need to, like, our wheelhouse is LinkedIn, so we know that if you post something to, you know, like 50 people, like you said, you know, you might get a few, yeah, great, you might get a few, please leave me alone, and you might get a few really bad responses, which I can't say on a podcast right now.
Right, but, right. Well, context matters. Context matters based on what people are dealing with and what people are looking and what's important to them. And that's an important aspect of understanding, to provide the context so that your communication can really hit home.
So I mentioned your writing a little bit earlier on. I saw that you write weekly for Fast Company as well. So in terms of your writing and your ideas for writing, what kind of inspires you when you're writing your content and the value pieces?
The thing that is really big for me is the reality of how it's actually going to be tangible. And so when I look back on my corporate career, my frustration, the reason I became a coach was I was very unimpressed with the coaching product that was out there because it was this floaty, theoretical, you know, it never really made it to the front lines of the business. Most people couldn't really interpret it. And so I used that experience. You know, I've got a great team that I work with who helps me come up with ideas and we challenge each other on that. But that's, you know, we could talk about theory. We could talk about what's supposed to happen, but what matters today? And how do you create really valuable content today that somebody's going to say, I can actually make a change based on that rather than just read it, put it away, and okay, that was nice, and I can move on. There's no shortage of content out there, you know, the top 20 things to do before great leaders do before breakfast and all of that other stuff. Doesn't change anything. All you're doing is checklist and all the stuff that you're not doing. I like to think about things in terms of, hey, we need to change our people strategy for our business. What does that actually look like? Are we rethinking the way we're thinking about employees? What does an employee mean? And give people the exercises and the work to really think through the decisions that they have to make so that they can have something tangible to take away.
So they can have actionable advice and content rather than just the place. I mean, I agree that mindset has its place, but I feel like with a lot of blogs out there, it can just be a formula for maybe just SEO and they want to rank into those keyword topics and you have like, oh, these are the top five ways you can do this. But like I mentioned before, we don't put anything out there we don't do ourselves. I don't think anyone else should, in a sense, which is why no one resonates with content, which is you should be waking up at 5 a.m. every morning doing 10 press-ups. And before then, you've already had 4 showers. You know, you've cooked every child in the vicinity breakfast. You know, it's things like that.
Lunch,
which
yeah,
people,
yeah.
Yeah, and the lunch, you've got to do that. And you've done it all by 7 a.m. because yeah. then you've got all your client meetings.
One thing I will say about that, and it's probably the anti of what I know it's the anti of what most marketing people have told me to do. I pay no attention to algorithms. I pay no attention to SEO because I just don't care. Right. So for me, there is this desire to build a following on Instagram and LinkedIn and everything else. And people are trying to beat the algorithms and people are worried about word choice and everything else. And there's a place for that. It has zero influence on what I create from a value standpoint, a content standpoint. I just don't care. The people who need to read it will find it. And outside of that, I don't need, you know, 10,000 people following me that aren't going to listen. And so my big focus is creating valuable content. I'd rather put out one valuable piece a month than 15 pieces a day that are just noise. Because it's irrelevant. And if people engage with me and read my work, they know, and people are following me now, they know I'm only going to put out something that's going to be valuable.
Yeah, if you have 4 people saying, you know, I read the article and really resonated with me in my situation right now, and I want a little bit help with it, and you can take it further and you can actually help that person, it's worth way more than 100,000 likes.
Right.
Because of 105 likes post will probably be something which has already been posted before. Maybe it's a video source somewhere else. And that's the difference, I feel, between viral content and content which has a purpose. And I feel every person in the business space currently is battling the, oh, we want viral content because we know we're going to get maximum amount of eyeballs on it, maximum amount of likes, and we could turn that into sales and opportunities. Whereas on the other hand, if you just had 100 or 200, if you had 100 or 200 of right people, you're going to get a lot further and you're going to build more of a community. And even if it's a starting point, even if it's just, you know, like I said, 1 or 2 people, like as long as they're into you and you're providing them enough value and they're buying into you, you've got like clients for life then. And I think that's is worth more than just the likes and the comments. But every time you say that, it kind of sounds like, yeah, but you can't get them. It's like, well, there's ways of getting them. You can buy them and it'll just tank your accounts, or you can buy the likes and comments and you can have them off posts which are really irrelevant to you. But it's at the same time, like, what would really benefit your business in the long run?
That's right. Yeah. It's when I send a note to an executive, they answer my email, right? And I'm not big on the spam. And I feel like a lot of marketers try to use this strategy And I know this because they pitched me on it, and I was anti, you know, send out 100,000 emails and you might get 1,000 responses and it might turn into one meeting. And I'm just not going to do that. It really waters it down. I think a lot of people went to marketers to say, I need help. And this was the easy strategy that they came up with, but it actually doesn't help. And so when you're very smart and targeted about who you want to be in front of and providing actual value to make sure that they are getting what they need, your conversations then, I mean, I've built a library. And so now it's about building a general library that anybody, if you were to look me up, you could look at all the articles, you could look at all the podcasts, and there's no noise in any of it. There's no fluff. And I'm getting phone calls now, right? People are soliciting me to say, I read this. I know I want to work with you. So let's just get started. It completely changes your business model in terms of how you're chasing all this business. You don't have to chase it once you build a valuable library that people can access.
So ironically, that's what's probably bringing a lot of, I know you don't believe in SEO, but the more you post about that topic on your website and you've got a big list of knowledge bank out there, what you're doing is you're showing your authority to Google, and they'll go, oh, this person knows a lot about what they're talking about. And so you will rank in those keywords regardless. So even though you're not even caring about it, you're doing it anyway, which is good.
Right. And it's a long-term play. It's certainly a long-term play where eventually the cream rises to the top, and it's not, you can't get this short term, and people are so focused on short term, you know, how can we spike this and how can we spike this? But then you get forgotten. There's so much noise, and so many people now are just trained to just turn it off. If you look at Instagram, the people just scroll and keep going. Nothing really makes them stop. Nothing really does that. So when people need something, they go and find it, and you want to be the person that has what they need when they need it, because then they're going to call you. Just creating noise and having people follow you, eventually, you know, the SEO will catch up. And SEO is valuable, so you know what people are looking for, and you can customize, of course, but you don't want to just create that noise, because people will bucket you into that noise category.
Exactly. So you wrote a book in 2020. Did the pandemic kind of inspire it on? Was it before or after, or when it was kind of happening?
I had started writing it a few years before. But then when the pandemic hit, I just sat down and wrote it. Cleaned it up, and I was able to. It was called Adapting in Motion, Finding Your Place in the New Economy. And there was so much change. You know, my corporate career, a big lesson and my background was working in PR and executive communications for the banks during the financial crisis, which was like the worst job you could have at the worst possible time. But so much change happening, and seeing the executives who did really, really well in responding to it informs a lot of the work I do with my clients today. And so this was a lot of, you know, revisiting the arc of change management, of awareness of change. We recognize the change is happening. How do you prepare on an individual level for change that you don't know is coming? And then how do you turn that into a learning mindset? And how do you use that to make good decisions and use that for wisdom? And so that I wrote that very quickly once the pandemic hit, and then it launched right, you know, about a little less than a year after that.
Yeah, I feel, during that time, a lot of people were, you know, put themselves into, you know, getting the stuff done they wanted to get done, or they kind of felt like, oh, I've not used that time as much as I can do. And I think some people feel like post-pandemic regret that they haven't like got, you know, their most out of it. And it was like, it was not a lot to most to get out of what you were doing, really, is having to live through something which was, you know, now currently it was unprecedented. You know, a lot of people did not see that coming. Right. You know, with anything, if any kind of books out there, it was like, okay, maybe if you were looked into the past and saw, maybe this happened in the future, but no one knows exactly when it's going to happen. But yeah, I feel a lot of people were coming out of it now and thinking to themselves, well, what did I do in that time? There was a lot of businesses which adapted from that time. I've been talking to quite a few people on this podcast actually about what they did during the last 2 years. The first question I usually ask people on the podcast is, what you've been doing for the last 2 years, because that kind of shows the type of person they are. Because what they've done is they've gone through a pandemic, and there's a few changes that will go out there. People either completely changed how they approach business, or they didn't want to be in their business anymore, or they think to themselves, I need to adapt quickly. And now it's a question of, how do I adapt if something like this happens again?
So that's right. Yeah. We're in year four of a pandemic, which a lot of people don't, you know, really think about it that way. We think about the pandemic being over, but at the beginning of it, they said this could be a 10-year thing. And people laughed, but we're actually in year four of a pandemic where your business is fundamentally changed. How you reach people is fundamentally changed. How people consume content fundamentally changed. We've got AI coming in now with ChatGPT and all of that stuff. It's fundamentally changing everything. And if you're not anchored in a particular type of way, a big struggle that people had during the pandemic was they got stuck at home with no social interaction, forced to have conversations in their head that they weren't ready to have. And a lot of people just didn't know what to do with that. And that was a lot of the conversations when I launched the book and talking to clients and seeing what resonated was, you know, it helped give them an anchor and ask the questions that they needed to answer themselves. You know, what do you actually believe? Who is in your social network that can support you? What about self-love and self-care? What does that actually mean? And what does that mean for you? And we don't take the time to answer those questions because we're so externally facing. But by focusing on the internal to see how you make decisions fundamentally changes the way that you're going to approach the next couple of years.
Yeah, it's it was strange because I even see it in like in a personal friendship level where talking to someone face-to-face felt strange. And that's kind of something you don't want to happen at all because you've got hybrid working now, people are away from the Zoom calls, and people got used, I guess, to being, okay, I'll present for a little bit and then I'll press mute and then you can like, you know, tone down a little bit. So maybe you'll have that in the office where you're talking to someone and then all of a sudden you realize, oh, I need to continue being present and aware and rather just hitting mute and then just falling asleep. And yeah, it is year four. I kind of agree with you on there because no matter what happened previously, we're going to see the results of it going forward, especially like I said, in the economy, what it's done to people or what it's still doing to people and how people are still recovering from it. And it is the personal level of, you know, what happens next? Where do I go next? And how do I feel? Because in the realm of coaching and consulting, and going into businesses and inspiring change, what's usually the first question you ask when you enter a business owner and you see what they're doing? What would be the first question you would ask them?
Well, the first question, if they're engaging me, is what does success look like? And that gives you an anchor on where people actually want to go. And then we could fill in the details on what it is that we need to focus on. And what does success look like usually takes two or three meetings to say, what do we actually need to change? And how are we being intentional with that change? You know, I think when you're looking at business owners where people are working virtually and we can hide behind the cameras and we can mute things, people will forget about you, right? Everyone is so busy. We have to figure out a way to articulate our own value. And in order to articulate our own value, we have to figure out what our identity is. And so that is a fundamental. When I'm working with business owners, we could talk about the business, but we also have to talk about you as an individual. What is your identity and how do you anchor yourself to something in terms of what do you believe and all of that? It allows you to have very different types of conversations when you're comfortable with who you are as an individual. So generally, it's what does success look like from a big picture? And then I put it almost into like three categories is what's your identity? I call it the three I's. What's your identity? How are we intentional in the change? You know, what intentionally needs to happen? Because without intentionality, you're just spinning wheels. And then how do we be inquisitive on it? How do we ask really, really good questions to make sure that of both ourselves and the people around us to make sure that we're getting to what that target's going to be?
I'm guessing the question itself is what does the sex look like? Because if you can't answer that, it's kind of a question of, well, what, you know, I'll be the business's message in general going forward. So with Maverick, we want to help businesses get clients, grow faster so they can spend less time selling. So they're not, small business owners aren't becoming salespeople. They are, you know, they're living and breathing their business, helping people and their clients come in. So that's the kind of the mantra we put into, and that's what success looks like to us. But it's kind of, I feel you need a big goal and a big, like we want to help 1 million businesses. Like that's our thing. We're going to help 1 million businesses. And then from that, it's like, what does the small goals look like? Like in terms of maybe our revenue currently and we can build our team, or maybe it's the type of clients we bring in. Maybe we're looking to help some more corporates on a level and we go international because we've got international events now. So I guess it is an important thing to say, well, what does success look like? But then it's also what does sex look like in the short term and long term as well?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, helping 1 million customers is a great goal. How you help those customers will evolve over time. No matter what business plan you put together, it's going to be garbage in about 6 months because the world and context changes. So how you help them will constantly shift in the short term. But by having that beacon to say, I want 1 million customers to have been helped by the end of 2024. Now, all of a sudden, you could say, all right, who are we in front of? How do we change that? How do we get in front of these people? And how do we influence that type of change in a way that's meaningful to them? And that's a good, you know, start with the big picture and then break it down on a local, you know, is this going to get us towards 1 million customers if that's ultimately what it is that you want to do?
Yeah, I wrote a script and I recorded it earlier today about routines, essentially. And it was like, what does routine look like to you? And how can you get into a routine which actually gets you clients? And it was all about basically selling on LinkedIn. So you should be posting content every day. You should be engaging with prospects, growing your network, you know, all the good stuff. And it was, how do you create a routine you can actually stick to? Because, like I say, a lot of people do it all at once. We go in, we want to try something, and then if you gave someone an idea in their head of oh, this is probably the right way you want to do it, this is how you can achieve it, and they'll go, great, I'll do it all right now. And you can tell by February or by March they're thinking, oh, I've slowed down, I've done about a day of work and for this section, but this took priority right now. So it's really hard to ingrain something new in your life because you've been doing your life constantly over and over again. And if you're not a person of routine, it can be quite hard, because if you are, I'm going to say, you don't want to call yourself reactionary, but if you're the type of person who goes, okay, I'm going to throw myself into this and give my all to this, that routine can kind of fall by the wayside. So yeah. I would say, what would be your suggestion on how to keep a routine?
Two things I would say to that. One is, if you want to change something, it has to become part of your identity. And so if you want to be, let's say you want to lose 50 pounds, you have to make decisions as to what a thin person would be eating all the time. And you only make those decisions in the moment when it becomes a part of who you actually are. So if you want to identify as a triathlete, then you have to start doing what other really good triathletes start doing. If you want to identify as a LinkedIn expert, you have to do what LinkedIn experts are doing. That's one. Two, I've changed because I'm very guilty of trying to do too much, too short, and everything falls off and we get overwhelmed and our task list and our Trellos and everything just comes in all overdue and we're not getting anything finished, is I've changed my conversation from tasks to priorities. Where if this is constantly being deprioritized, then it's no longer a priority. Take it off your list, right? And if it must become a priority, then you have to force that to become a priority. It's not tasks, not getting things done, but kind of like that big picture of my priority is to reach 1 million people. My priority is to get 500,000 people on my subscription list, whatever it is. That's got to be your priority every day. If we pick too many, if we pick 10 things, you can't have 10 priorities. And so when we go lower to say, this is my priority right now for this bigger picture for 1 million people or whatever it is, that's got to be your priority. It's the first thing you do every day. And then everything else will fall in after that. And it's very cathartic to say, this is not a priority, so it just comes off my list. Maybe I'll revisit it next year or something. It's still a good idea. But making it a priority and part of your identity are two of the ways that you're gonna make it stick.
Also helps with leadership if you're running a team of people and you can say to yourself, well, what do I need to do right now, which is my priorities, and what can I give priorities to my team to head towards? Because if they're looking for you for leadership, they may be thinking, well, I don't know what my priorities are. I've got like 5 or 6 different things. But you'll say, okay, this is probably what will give you the best results for this objective that we want to achieve. So if you focus on this and you make this your priority, but also feed in the little things that could help. But if they are, as I said, if they're getting neglected in your team, but you want them to happen, you need to make that a priority. You have to communicate that with your team, which goes into communication that we mentioned earlier.
And so, it's very important to note on the communication thing. You have to communicate your vision all of the time. It is constant. I remember working in corporate, the CEO was so frustrated with the talking points. He said, I've said this so many times, but my boss looked at him and said, not everyone's heard it. So you have to be consistent in what your vision is and what your priorities are and communicating that effectively so that everybody hears it. And it's going to be an ongoing conversation to make sure that everybody fully hears what you want to do.
We say that with a lot of our content as well, with a lot of people we help with content. It's about, you might post about something and then you might post about it again in a month's time, but they'll come back to you and say, well, I've already said this. You know, how many times can I keep saying the same thing over and over and over again? And I was like, yes, but at the same time, no one's going to see everything that you put out there. So that's right. You need to say it over and over again. You can annoy yourself. You can really annoy yourself by doing it. But at the same time, if you don't do it, then the person who really needs to hear it won't hear it.
And you take a look at the people, I mean, in the coaching industry, you look at the Mel Robbins, you look at the Brené Browns, you look at the Simon Sinek's, they have one thing that they talk about all the time. Mel talks about her 5-second thing. Brené just talks about vulnerability. Simon Sinek talks about whatever he talks about. But that's it. And when you go to them, you know what you're getting. You know you're getting vulnerability, the 5-second rule, whatever that is. And so picking the one thing and making that yours gives someone, you know, when people come to you, they have an expectation and you have to meet that expectation. When you don't meet the expectation, then they disengage. And so when you're able to talk about the one thing in many different ways, in different contexts with different audiences, that gives you an anchor that people can say, you know what, this is the person I want to go to for that.
Fantastic. So final question, it's a question I ask everyone I talk to on the podcast. What is one piece of advice you can give a business owner today that would help grow their business?
To help grow their business, I would say to the things that helped me grow my business when I was launching my business. One, no one can be satisfied in life if they aren't satisfied with the one person they can never be separated from. That's a Jean-Jacques Rousseau quote. So it's ultimately up to you. Nobody's going to buy from you if you're not going to buy from yourself. But then number two, and I love this in terms of selling your business. Someone once told me, you can have the greatest peach tree in Georgia. Not everybody likes peaches, and that's okay. And so when you're going to pitch your business and sell your business, if you get turned down, it's okay. It has nothing to do with you as an individual. It has nothing to do with your product necessarily. They just may not need what it is that you're offering at that time. And that completely changed the way where it took the pressure off in terms of, I have to close this business, close this business, close it. You don't. You have to be in front of the right types of people, and the people who need your peaches are going to come. And so be smart about who the people are that you're trying to get in front of.
Fantastic. So if anyone wants to connect with you, Jim, how would they go about doing that?
Sure. The website's jimfrawley.com or bellwetherhub.com. That's got all the services we do from a coaching perspective. I host the Bellwether Hub podcast, and the book is called Adapting in Motion, Finding Your Place in the New Economy. And then I'm Jim Frawley NY on all the socials.
Fantastic. Well, thanks again, Jim, for your time.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Thank you for watching or listening to this episode of the Maverick Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to us on all the channels and share if you've taken some value from this episode. Thanks again, Jim, for your time. And we'll see you next time.